My friends, I'm opening the first 50 spots for something new I've built, the Mental Fitness Blueprint. It's not content, it's not a course, it's a personalized operating system for your mind, built from everything I've learned through thousands of conversations, interviews, and years of practice. If you feel like this is for you, follow that curiosity, and details are in the show notes or at mchampagne.com. Ben, who are you?
That's a huge question, Mark. I am a father. I'm a husband. I'm a son. I'm a brother. Those are core aspects of who I am. And I'm someone right now who's a bit cold. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I would say that I am a seeker. I spent a lot of my life seeking knowledge of myself, trying to understand and connect with something more, however one might describe that. And related to that, I've always, for as long as I can remember, really taken seriously this idea of having a calling, a vocation, something that, you know, that we each are wired a particular way with certain gifts and capabilities and are invited to make our unique contributions. That's exploring that question and trying to give expression to that has been a big part of my journey.
And how do you feel? I love that answer, by the way. It's just, I feel the authenticity in that, and also feel, I mean, I'm a bit biased because I, of course, read your book, but also feel that you've gone through the journey. You've gone through, you've done, definitely done the work and continue to do the work to be able to answer the question in that level of authenticity, that not just through the words, but you can feel that coming through your energy. Because I guess my question is kind of let's call it pre-Canyon. How do you think you would have answered that "who am I" question?
Yeah, I spent, you know, for a long time, I defined myself by I am what I do, or I am what I achieve, or I am, my sense of self is defined by those around me and whether or not I'm living up to their expectations or performing to please them or earn their love and affection in a way. But when I began, you know, sort of a deeper dive into my own inner journey, which was about a decade ago, I was coming out of almost 10 years of being an ordained minister and pastor. I'd started a community in Seattle, a community that was really committed to supporting the people on the margin. So people dealing with mental illness or substance addiction, homelessness, women caught up in sex trafficking. And it was a really beautiful, vibrant community. It made a great impact. I was collaborating with some incredible people who remain dear friends. But in that journey, I lost my way. I lost that connection to myself. So yeah, in previous versions of myself would have answered myself by what I'm doing, the exciting thing I'm working on. And yeah. I mean, I still have that. I'm drawn to exciting things and projects and challenges. But I don't know, you know, those are aspects, those are expressions that flow out of that deeper identity.
I find it interesting because, I mean, not everyone has your background, of course, and you would, and this is just me, I guess, you know, you could easily make the assumption that what you just described in that kind of work, you know, there's the core mission and core purpose, like so fully aligned and so forth, right? But I remember I wrote down this quote. You said, you know, I was cornered by my own lifestyle with its commitments of career and kids, marriage and mortgage and other midlife concerns. And, you know, it just makes me think, and hopefully everyone listening, like, we're all on our journey and it doesn't matter what the jobs are or where you're at and so forth. I mean, I feel like we all get to some level of this questioning, right? I guess, what was it for you at that point where, because it seemed like things were really, really going, like, how does one know when they've lost their heart or lost their way to themselves?
Yeah. Well, I would, you know, to just speak to some of what you just shared there, you know, I was in this realm where people would perceive, you know, some people, not everyone, that I was doing virtuous work, right?
Yeah.
That's sort of, this is meaningful. It's virtuous. There's like a goodness. Totally. Wow, he's not chasing up, climbing the corporate ladder or accumulating power or whatever it is. And yet, yes, in this moment, which I'll, you know, share with you, sort of realize, wow, I'm playing, I start to peel back these layers, I'm playing the same game as so many people are, which is, again, I'm defined by what I do, what I achieve. It's just, I almost had fooled myself into this idea that I wasn't, and I couldn't see it. until I was finally confronted with it. And how did that happen? Well, so I like to talk about this, you know, in my book, I interact with Joseph Campbell, the mythologist's idea of the hero's journey, this ancient pattern that's through all myths and stories and cultures and religious traditions of this journey where we, as I talk about, we leave the familiar, we fall into the unknown, we rise to wholeness. Those are these three main phases. But one of Campbell's terms that I so love and I relate to comes back to this idea of my calling, but he talks about the call to adventure. And the call to adventure is really the thing that expels you, expunges you from your previous life. It's saying, hey, this has worked for a while, but these operating patterns, they can't serve you going forward.
Yeah.
And the call isn't always to something that we're clear about. It's often initially a call out of something. And for me, it wasn't just a role. It was a way of being, right? And my call to adventure, there's a lot of ways they come to us, came in what I describe as more of a mystical way. I was out for early morning run in the Seattle rain, as I often did. And I was charging up this hill about to turn the corner and like sprint the last 10 blocks home, you know, this invigorating workout to start the day and then go do my work and make an impact. But I got to the top of that hill one day. And it was like this whisper inside of me said, if you don't have your heart, you have nothing. And you know, it stopped me dead in my tracks. I'm pulling out my AirPods, just walked home in the rain, crawled into bed. And initially what I knew was this was a message, like I was totally burned out. That's what it was saying to me. And yet there was an invitation to go deeper. And that's where, as I peeled back the layers, well, why am I burned out? And why actually am I burned out again? Like I've been here before. And it's because I had had this allegiance to these operating patterns of achieving and perfecting, performing to please others.
Ben, what was the dominant emotion when that hit you at the top of that hill? Like, was there fear there or some panic, or was it like one of those things that was in the back corner of the closet in a way in the mind? And it was just like, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, I think I'd say there's a few responses. I mean, I had been in the middle of about a 6-month transition out of this nonprofit that I started and I was the executive director of. And that was a grueling period. And if we look at transitions in our lives, whether they're the ones we plan or the unwanted transitions, you can think of illness, loss of a loved one, job loss, you know, those kinds of things. I actually see those are all also a call to adventure. The call comes in those moments, but maybe you've been there. It's easy to suppress those things. And just get through it, move on. And that's why it took sort of a different approach, which was, for me, was this inner whisper that was like, hey, this doesn't work anymore. So in that sense, just with that context, it was like, of course, like I've been going through it for a while. I was trying to do a lot of different things and people, you know, some people weren't happy with me and I was exhausted. So it was like, yes, I know. And also I'd say there was this bit of fear that, you know, especially as I peel back layers, it's like, if this isn't who I am, then who am I really? And then the more pressing question, at least as we feel it, was, well, then if I'm going to leave all of this work, then what will I do? Right. Yeah. That's something I dedicated a good chunk of my life to up to that point. And then I think over time, you know, there's probably a little bit of, I'd almost call it, it's like a shame. And I think this can happen in midlife, maybe especially with men, but it's, how did I not see this? How did I not know? Like, I should be farther along by now, like say in my inner work, like I'm a pastor, I'm a spiritual person. Yeah. I need a lot of reflection. I should have known this. How could I not have seen it? Right.
Totally.
And if we give over to those emotions, that can be a way that we refuse or resist the call initially.
Yeah. What was the first conversation after this came to you? What was the first conversation and how do you frame it with your wife?
Wow. Okay. So you're going to love this because of some stuff I know that's near and dear to you. But yes, the first conversation was with my wife, who is like, why did my sweaty, rain-soaked husband just crawl in bed and want to lay there?
Get out of here.
Something's off. Get away. But, you know, she really listened to me and she encouraged me to clear my calendar that day, except for one thing. I had one meeting on the calendar with a mentor. It was a lunch meeting. very timely. And so she's like, keep that meeting. So she was very supportive, just curious, listening. So then there's the next conversation, which is with Ron, this mentor. We meet up over lunch. And he, you know, again, using this hero's journey, this is what off we get the call to adventure. And then almost immediately, even if we like say yes, just a little bit, help arrives, right? So I already had help arriving. So it was like,
yeah,
my Gandalf or something like that, right? He's,
yeah,
he's a wizard meeting me. And in that conversation, I can remember one of the things he said, you know, I sort of spilled my guts like, here, oh, just this kind of despairing. And he's like, you're far more buoyant than you realize. You know, like,
wow.
Yes, this is hard, but you have resources, internal resources to handle this, to navigate this, to carry it, to weather this. So that was very powerful. And then this is the part you'll like. We were at this shopping mall or something, like a restaurant, and then we went through the mall and we go by, I think it was Papyrus, which is this like paper store.
Yeah, 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 card store and
like,
stuff.
He's like, I'm getting you a journal. You need a journal. And it was this, you know, which was like this amulet that he gave me. And it was an invitation to dig in, to reflect. And I can say something about that for a second. I had had for a long time, I've been journaling since I was in middle school. I've had a reflection practice, lots of one, different ones. Yeah. But when I look back, I literally can look through my journals in this season, it's leading up to that. If you don't have your heart, you have nothing moment. And I could see what used to be reflection, introspection, had become like strategizing, planning.
Mm.
And so in that moment with Ron, it, you know, as I opened those pages and started to journal again, I realized, wow, okay, reflection, my reflection had become about looking forward rather than inward. So there I was, you know, the invitation that he presented to me was, yes, you can handle this. And almost like, but only if like you make space to actually do the work, to reflect, to go deep, to get honest with yourself.
Well, and there's, I mean, the whole, it's all kind of challenging. And, but I would say like, that's the big one, right? It's like, okay, you know, and even when you have the signs and you have the people showing up and you're like, wasn't that interesting? You still have to take the leap, right?
Yeah.
Like you still have to make the commitment and go for it and jump into like really the unknown in a way, and a whole whack of uncertainty, right? It's daunting.
Yes. Well, and you know, I see this in workshops and coaching that I do. It's very easy. And I've seen this in myself, say this call to adventure, like something has to change, especially if we're used to being planners and, you know, strategizing things and have the, we want to like bypass the unknown or the underworld or, you know, that, because it feels the darkness and we want to move on to, even if we have a glimmer of something, it's like, oh, now I'm going to, it must be the job. It must be the marriage. It must be something on the surface of my life, not to dismiss those things. They're all very important, but we want maybe a quick fix.
Yeah.
And we try to modify our life in such a way that we can, I would say, give ourselves the illusion of change is happening. I'm answering the call when in fact, the real call, as you're saying, it's about making space. It is about slowing down. This is the first act of saying yes. It's really, can I really allow myself to be in the discomfort of not knowing?
Yeah. Ben, where do we go from here? I mean, we can go to standing naked in front of a cactus. We can do the walking obituary. There's the moment where you're calling yourself a jaguar. I mean, there.
Yes.
Where do we go from now?
So here's what comes up for me when you bring that up. So a big, something really important to me in these seasons of transition is to say, how do we not just see it as a season of transition, right? Between the work we do or the relationships or where we live, but it's an invitation to deep transformation.
Yeah.
That's what I think, right? So in the liminal space between who we've been and who we're becoming, what is the most important thing? Well, it's critical. Like we can read a lot of books. Hey, read my book, read Mark's book, read books. But at the end of the day, we can get caught in a cycle of just reading and trying to like get the answer somewhere else. And what's most important is practices. What are the practices that are the things we're going to do, the habits of the heart, contemplative practices, mindfulness practices, rituals? What are the things we're going to commit to and or experiment with a bit that are going to help us go inward, help stabilize our nervous system, help us be present to the emotions we're feeling, all this stuff. And, you know, that with those examples you gave, that actually represents a number of practices. But one of the ones that I think I always give like I prescribe people a heavy dose of this, and it's overlooked. It's time in nature. I like to call it, and others use this language, but rewilding. Yeah. If we want to listen to our soul or, you know, to that inner voice, like we have got to get away from our computers, got to get outside and allow for nature. And this is very much influenced by the work of Bill Plotkin, who, you know, sort of really inspired me, but allow nature to be a mirror to our own souls. So animals might be our teachers, right? There's a lot of indigenous traditions that see the power of animals as teachers and guides. There is what I call a wander, right? You spend intentional time in nature where you're not like trying to hike up a peak. You're not trying to get your steps in. When you're paying attention to these subtle nudges and you're sitting by the base of this tree or you're getting off the path and you're noticing the butterfly. It's, you know, it can sound very weird, but you're being present. And it's amazing, even if we give ourselves an hour to do that, the kinds of insights that can come to us, or in a way, even how nature can heal us as it brings us into ourselves, right?
Well, there's just what I find interesting about that. And as I also continue to study just different teachers and modalities and perspectives and teachings from literally across, you know, all of time and all, like whether those are indigenous elders or samurai or poets, like the consistent part, I mean, there are many consistencies, but the big one that I see that you're bringing up is just this prioritization of stilling the mind in some capacity, right? Like kind of surprising, but not surprising that you got the whisper on the run, because you're on the run and it's like, you're not embedded in all of the other things going on in your life. And it's, or people can relate to, you know, when you're taking a shower, but the consistent there usually is the mind is a little bit quieter because it's all there. Yeah. We can just blow out some of the mental clutter and let it kind of surface, right? And then of course, like you're saying, there's also just there's things that I can't even put words to, like the healing aspects of nature and so forth. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't even understand or we don't have the understanding of that. It's just almost like miraculous. But if you just sit in the forest and look what's going on anywhere, it's pretty incredible, right?
Yes. Well, you've probably heard of the Shinrin Yoku is the Japanese idea of forest bathing, right?
Yeah.
And the science shows that nature does have this healing impact on us, right?
Yeah.
The stillness, I mean, still being still, stillness, becoming still. I'm still is a huge word for me. You can actually see it over my shoulder here. Still life was the initial of my kind of some meditation experiences I was leading back when I lived in Seattle. It's always there for us, but will we slow down? And right, you can't just, in our quick fix society, we was like, well, if I just meditate once, shouldn't I get to enlightenment? Or shouldn't I get the answers? If I go out and, you know, walk in the woods or in the desert, shouldn't I experience something? Well, you might.
Yeah.
And I would say expect it and be open, but you're going to have a better chance of tapping into the innate stillness that we all carry if you build habits, practices, and you are intentional about it.
Yeah. So practically speaking, you have the chat, well-timed chat with this mentor, and what happens next? Because like, again, like this is the stuff most people don't talk about. Like, I guess the visual I have, it's like these are the tendons in the knee. Like people talk about the knee replacement. You know, if you will, maybe this is a terrible analogy, but like the big thing, like you go in the canyon and you have this experience, and I want to touch on some of those things, but it's like, you got to get there and there's real life stuff happening. You know, you got the journal now. It's like, what are you writing in the journal to get to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm going to go here and I'm going to go through this experience, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I was fortunate. I was fortunate to have a sabbatical, but this was a year after this experience happened. So I had to get there. And I knew, I was like, I don't want to go crawling into my sabbatical exhausted. I will be a nightmare for my family. I will squander that time. So that was a luxury. It's a luxury we don't all get. And so it's very important for me to say, when we have this call to adventure, there's some inner shift and we're trying to pay attention. You don't have to. And I think there is a narrative and this idea that this is how it has to be, but you don't, it's not about like, you don't go eat, pray, love your way around the world in order to find yourself. You don't have to do that. You can do this as I did, married, father of three, you know, scrappy nonprofits, raising money, serving people. Like, you can do it in the midst of daily life. But again, this is where being intentional comes in. I think, you know, so practically speaking, I like to talk about microdosing solitude, right? So
yeah, I like just that.
Little moments. It doesn't have to be a year away or a month away or even a day. How can we begin to introduce new rhythms? And I really think journaling, reflecting, you know, meditation, very powerful, recommended. But when you're just getting started, I think journaling is very tangible, a reflective practice of some sort, right? But I think there's a practice even before that. And this is one, again, so if we're talking journaling, meditation, this rewilding idea, rites of passage, this is sort of my bundle of practices that they're free, by the way, equip people with. And the last one, it's the first one, which is subtraction. Subtraction. Now, what do I mean by subtraction? You've studied wisdom teachers across time and place. There's a long history of subtraction. Subtraction might be retreating into the desert, into solitude. So you're subtracting that connectedness to society. Subtraction might be historically a fasting practice,
yeah,
where you're not eating, not to diet. It's not intermittent fasting, but it's to allow yourself to not just sort of impulsively go eat, drink this, and instead tune in, right? But subtraction, as I see it, very practical. It's like, we got to ask ourselves the question, where is there clutter in my life? Mm-hmm. And that could be, we have no boundaries at work. Could be where our media habits, you know, scrolling or binge watching shows, could be our consumption of food, drink, other substances, could be, and this was part of it for me, I was always someone with major FOMO. I wanted to be everywhere with everyone. I had to confront that and realize, like, socially, I was overcommitted. So I had to kind of, you know, draw that back. So as you can see, it might even be a hobby, something like you love to golf. Maybe you don't need to do 18 holes every weekend. Maybe go to 9, right? We can start to subtract. And then what do we do with that space? That's where we start to, you know, cultivate that intentional solitude, time with ourselves.
Well, and it's not about then filling the space. I mean, you're using the space, I think, a little bit more intentionally, right?
Yep.
And I love the idea of, because I mean, there's so much discussion around fasting, and of course, like the mainstream narrative or the narratives that are out there more often is it's a physical fast, right? And so forth. And there's beautiful ways you can do that, obviously, to support, you know, even coming into a new season and whatnot. But one element or I guess tone to that you were bringing up that I was just exposed to in for the next book myself, and this was inspired by Black Elk, an indigenous elder, and he kind of came at it as an identity fast. And imagine just, and again, like, I love your vibe around like what you can do literally now. You don't have to go to the mountain, obviously beneficial, but like, what can you do right now? And what he was saying was around the idea of noticing the thoughts and the self-talk and the judgments and the things that are coming up that are no longer aligned with the person that you're trying to become, essentially. Just, you know, pick a time period, just like you would a physical fast. If you're going to do like a 3-day water fast or something for the next 3 days, just notice that stuff and slowly kind of, okay, that, thank you, but that's no longer needed on this side. And I just found it a beautiful, it's like a beautiful kind of cleansing of the mind.
Yes. Yeah. What you're saying, it reminds me of some words from one of my colleagues at Modern Elder Academy, where I get to teach and lead workshops. His name's Teddy. And Teddy says, you know, don't be so sure you know who you are. Don't be so sure you know who you are. And I think that is when this call to adventure comes, that's really what it's saying. It's like, you have been, I have been Ben, and this particular version of Ben. But there's actually more to who I am. And even initially, I might not know what else there is to my identity or who I am authentically. And this isn't, it's not like a referendum on how I've been showing up. It's not like yeah. a judgment. It's not a critique and, you know, something to feel a lot of shame about. It's just saying, no, a whole bunch of circumstances and things got you here. But yes, to go forward, there's going to be some shedding. I mean, this shows up in all the traditions, right? There, in yeah. order to receive what's coming, we really have to let go. And that's where I love guiding people. You know, I really invite them to think through, and it takes time, but what are those identities, that those outdated identities that you have this allegiance to, right? Like for me, the achiever, perfectionist, mm-hmm. but there's an infinite number of things: controller, victim, escapist. We could go on and on. Lone wolf, right? So yeah. many different things. And to really get curious, and initially what's scary is we might say, but who am I without that? Right.
Yeah.
Well, I actually really like parts of this. Like this is, it has served me well. Right. And then what will it mean for my business? For example, if I let go of this, like I still got to do the work. Right. But as we investigate these parts of ourselves, you know, if I could just speak to this a little bit more often, and this is where we're getting into the work of Carl Jung, this idea of the persona, or we could, you know, James Hillman talks about the provisional personality. It's something we learn to wear. I talk about it as a mask. It's our main interface. It's like an expression of the ego to interface with the world, to keep us safe, get our needs met, help us fit in, make sure we're not bullied on the playground, or, you know, whatever it might be. Those things crystallize into some behaviors and patterns. And often in midlife, that's where we're realizing, oh, this is kind of expiring. There yeah. is another way to be. But as we look back, it's, again, it's not just rip off that mask and just move on. Get really curious about it, because in reality, it's something to be celebrated. It's helped us. It's given us things that are fundamental gifts that we have to offer. And it's hurt us. Yeah. It's hindering us. It's harmed us, maybe even has harmed others. And so we got to get real about that. And that's where we get to carry both gratitude for this, the previous version of ourselves, and also important to acknowledge the grief we carry. That's going to be part of our healing and our way forward, is to just be real about that.
Well, and I think this is also where the power of rituals and rites of passage and so forth, where at least in North America, we don't do a super good job in doing any of that, frankly. Or it's, you know, like we do it like with marriages, of course, and funerals, and there's a specific time period to have those moments, I guess you can say. But other than that, there's not much, right? As much as we've been speaking about like the things you can do in the present and so forth, which of course, super beneficial. But I also do believe, like what we see in all these other cultures, and especially the longer you go back, like the experience you had, like committing to leaving your regular environment and going to a mountain or a forest or name your place, whatever calls to you, and going through an experience and having, like, I think that's also important, right?
Yes.
We don't do that very much in our cultures. Can you share a little bit like how you got to that place and what that looked like?
I mean, if you look at, you know, in African tribes, for example, they would, when boys are entering manhood, they would have, you know, this rite of passage. You would be sent out into the bush. So you'd almost get kidnapped away. You get the surprise, you get taken away. You go, that's the departure, as Campbell talks about it, or leaving the familiar. Then you're out there in the wild, and it's the unknown. It's the initiation, as he talks about it. And then eventually, right, you discover something about yourself, you endure this thing, and then you come back with a gift or a contribution for your community in the world, and you have now entered adulthood, right?
Yeah.
And yes, you're right, we don't have that. We don't have that. And so I think this is where, why in 30s, 40s, 50s, there's this inner stirring, and it's in some ways because we've never been initiated, right? And I realize that can sound intimidating to people, but there's more to who we are, and our society is not set up to help us access more of that soul level sense of self, right? Yeah. We just really want to promote the ego. So
But you know, also, Ben, like, or we've had moments in our, like, big moments in our life that, you know, like, okay, that just, that it is what it is, like a business shut down or you made a big career change and we just keep kind of rolling versus yes. stopping and almost having a bit of a rite of passage in those moments too, I think, right?
Yes. Yes. And so, you know, we don't have to go out into the desert. I do recommend it. I mean, you know, be safe. I can talk to people about it, do that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
But what I, you know, so a very clear example of a rite of passage. So in a couple of years ago, we had moved across the country, back to Wisconsin. We'd been living in Seattle. I had this job. It was a great job. I also sensed some things were shifting and some other things I wanted to do. And, anyways, I got let go because they were downsizing, reorg, et cetera. And I wanted to market. So I had these fancy business cards that they had given me. And so on my last day, I put a fire in my Solo stove outside. It was a cold winter day. And then one by one, I just dropped these business cards in there with, you know, this acknowledgement of gratitude for what it had given me, and also acknowledging any feelings of discomfort or fear I had with the unknown. And yet, so it was really, and then of course I made a little video and sent it to a few of my colleagues who were still there. And it was fun to have that exchange, but it was a way to ritualize. So what are we talking here? Give visible expression to something, and which is both the external shift that's happened, but also in a way an invisible internal reality of what I'm going through. So you can do these like small rites of passage rituals, or right, you can go out to a park in the area by your house if you're going through something, right? So and have a intention, have a threshold you cross. It might be a stream, it might be a stone. Open yourself up to what nature might want to offer you, and then come back over that threshold. And, you know, in a way you're acknowledging you've been through something, right? Yeah. And you can extend that out. Or if you went through a divorce, you could have a dinner with some of your close friends where you get to ritualize and, you know, acknowledge this transition as opposed to just signing some papers. So all sorts of creative possibilities. And you're absolutely right. Like we have these significant moments. We don't really integrate them to the extent that we could. And I think that's where rites of passage and rituals come in.
One thing I wanted to speak with you about is the idea, like when we go through one of these experiences, and it could be big, it can be small, but like even your run when the whisper came in, there's this, how do I describe this? It's like we're given some clarity. Right. And if I think of you in the canyon, a lot of clarity coming through, and please do, you know, fill in any details of that. Like I said, and I, for everyone listening, I messaged Ben when I was reading it. I'm like, this feels like I'm reading a fiction. It was just so like, I could just visualize the scene, but it was obviously nonfiction and packed full of really awesome lessons. A little bit of teaser, pick up the book.
Yeah,
but what I picked up also from that scene, and you can get this in other ways as well, is you get some clarity. And in the moment, you're like, okay, like, this is where I need to go. Like, I feel it. And then often either, you know, to your point, you're kind of given a little bit of support, but you're, I think, equally tested too at the time. You're like, boom. And it almost feels like, really? Okay, so you said yes, buckle up, you're going to do this, but here's another test. I guess, like, how have you experienced that, or how's that shown up on your journey? And in those moments, what was helpful for you to get through, you know, maybe I'm using the wrong language, but for me, what resonates, it's like a test, like another test, or even it's almost like a validation that you're on the right path, but it's still hard.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, I think that there's a bunch coming to mind. And the thing I always say is it's really important to remember, to remind yourself it's all real. So say you have, it's like a flash of light. You get this insight, or it's something that happens out in the wild, or like I was in this canyon and, you know, on this kind of a, like a modeling the idea of a vision quest. And there were lots of discoveries and insights and moments. And the first step is to remember that it's all real. And so that's where, again, reflection is like writing some of these things down or the ritual and rites of passage. It's acknowledging, it's a way of making visible the invisible. So this is the other thing I wanted to add about that. So then we can look back when things get hard again, and they will, as we try to figure out how to integrate back into the world that we, quote unquote, the world that we left behind. It's good to look back and be like, no, something irreversible happened. It is real. I experienced a shift, and I got to stay the course. I'm going to keep going, right? So that might all sound a little vague still. So as we keep going, and this is for me where it always is going to come back to what are your practices? Because practices don't just help generate insight and discovery, but they actually help you. I mean, certain practices especially, they can stabilize your nervous system. Yeah. So you can remain calm, right? But they also give you a sense of endurance, because so much of this journey, it's a lot of the, one of the biggest challenges is our own, I'll say, small-minded thoughts on what the timeline needs to look like. And in reality, especially when there's some inner transformation. So I go to this canyon, I've been in a job for a few years I wanted out of, and I come out, I'm still in the job. That didn't change overnight. Yeah. But what happened was I had a new sense of like a trust that I was on the right path. And in time, not with me striving and forcing it, but things would align and a new way would open up, new job, a new possibility. That happened. I've seen that happen again and again, not just in my own life, but with other people.
But we need the reminders.
Yes. Right?
That's the thing. Right. We need the reminders over and over again. And I think that's why a lot of the books out there, I mean, not to discredit our work, of course, but I mean, we're all saying essentially the same thing packaged in different stories and perspectives and so forth. But if you really like keep reading kind of the classics and so forth, like the messaging is very, very similar. And I think that's great, like, because we're surrounded by the opposite of all of that wisdom all of the time, right? Like a bunch of fear, a bunch of comparison, a bunch of stress and so forth.
Yes. Well, and that's where, Joseph Campbell, his book was called The Hero with 1,000 Faces. Mm. And there's a reason for that, because he's saying there is this universal story, that's the hero, and there's the 1,000 faces, which is this idea that each of us has our own unique journey, our own unique expression of that, which is why we need the reminders.
Yeah, totally. Last thing I want to touch on. I mean, there's so many, we'll have to do a part two to this at one point, because there's so many things we didn't cover that I wrote That's down true. Here. But speaking of journaling, this set of questions that, man, I just think they're so powerful for anyone that goes through, whether it's a big kind of, and I hate to put a label, let's just say you go through some sort of experience to bring some more clarity, to help process, to whether it's a rite of passage or a ritual of some sort. I think these questions were from the guide that you had on your canyon experience. And here they are. Who went on that quest? What happened out there? Who returns? What healing gifts do you bring back to your people? I love that. And the question that I really would love your opinion on is, what remains in the mystery? Those are so good. Like, and for context, I think this was near the end of your quest or your experience. And it was some guidance around like, how do you integrate back into regular society and in the world?
Yes. Yeah. Which is relevant whether you go on a canyon quest or you've been on this internal journey while you're on the sidelines at your kid's soccer game or back at the office or whatever it might be. What remains in the mystery? So it's reminding me of the poet, the writer Rilke, who talks about living the questions, right?
Yeah. He's on and my that council.
It's when we're striving for answers. Oh, is he? Oh, I love it, right? Essentially, by living the questions someday down the line, and this is where we're talking timeline, right? That we might someday live our way into the answers. So to ask that question, what remains in the mystery, is actually to say we are, though initially it feels uncomfortable, I think we're always in the unknown. This is our reality, right? The only constant is that everything's changing all the time. And so to identify and get comfortable with the mystery is to say this isn't just like a blip on the radar of our lives. It's like this actually is the norm. And I think, you know, especially after you undergo a journey, I think each time you go through some sort of transition, large or small, some kind of transformation, we grow our capacity to be at home in the unknown. And I had one of my meditation teachers said to me, it's like, you know, the unknown becomes your playground. And I love that idea. And I really feel that. And so mystery becomes something we get to dance with as opposed to be scared of.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, resolve. So, I mean, there's a lot that's in the mystery for me even now, but it isn't haunting me in the same way that maybe in that period of my life, the unknown or the mystery was kind of terrifying.
I mean, it just lightens life, I think, right? Because then it's because I think you come to that childlike curiosity of, you know, just, well, like, what's going to happen next, or what's around over here? And it's just, you don't know. We were talking a little bit about consciousness work. I feel like that in that space right now, there's so much discussion and still so much unknown in that space, but yet some wild research and things happening. You're like this is so cool. Right. And, you know, I think you could have that with AI too, versus being completely terrified that, you know, it's going to wipe us out or something. I don't know. I'd rather that perspective than living in fear and this panic of uncertainty, because it's not a fun way to show up.
Yes, exactly. And to the degree that we can get comfortable with our own discomfort, or investigate the mysteries that we carry, or become comfortable in the unknown in our own journey.
Yeah.
Like, that is only going to, the more we can do that, the more equipped we are as leaders in whatever we're doing to navigate this time of immense change. And we need more people like that who have a sense of stability and adaptability amidst all of this, as opposed to getting blown about here and there by every little change or challenge that, or the chaos that we're facing. So, and this is where, you know, to really the full journey of the hero, and you've been hitting on this throughout this conversation, it's never just about yourself. So at the beginning, and feel like, this is maybe kind of selfish, self-indulgent, like, there's a lot going on out there. I got a lot to do. Do I really want to take space for this, even in micro moments? And it's like, well, guess what? That's viewing it wrong. Initially, it is. You can't resist. Like, you have to say yes for yourself.
Yeah.
But ultimately, this is about your healing and wholeness. It's about making everything more whole. It's about bringing healing beyond you. And that's where there's, in my own story, just a sense of connection. It's like, I still do feel this call to service, but I do increasingly see the individual as ground zero for change. Like, it really begins in our own hearts. So that's kind of what I focus on, and I love digging into.
Ben, I'm so grateful our paths have crossed, and you know, I'm sure I can speak for you as well. I feel like this is just the beginning of a really nice friendship. And speaking of
yes,
working together and sticking together and, you know, going down the path together. I mean, I feel that as well with you. So I just want to thank you first and foremost for making some time to come on the show, and then a higher thank you for you just, you know, listening to that initial whisper and continuing to listen to the whispers, because to your point, I mean, I think it's not just you that's benefiting from that. There's a ripple effect that is going across the world through all of the work in your book and this conversation and many more to come. So thank you for listening.
Mark, thanks for having me. It's such a gift to have this conversation. And yes, there will be many more.